B-Pod Studios.
Today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
All I can say is, wow, what a great conversation with Frank Bello, David Ellefson, and Ron Bumblefootball. Of course, David and Frank are in this band called Altitudes and Attitude, and that's a band they're kind of starting from the ground up, and I asked the guys about that.
It's fun to be in the game.
Yeah, it's totally fun. We're having a good time. I mean, look, the band thing, look, I kind of like the fact that we're building this thing up.
Bumblefoot talks about his upcoming tour with Asia as their guitar player and singer and getting back into the prog rock world.
So I've slowly, gotten into the prog world a bit, which is weird because when I started off, all my stuff was very proggy.
Plus, each guy gives me an update on what's going on with their other bands. David says now that the Ozzy tour was postponed, it might give Megadeth a chance to get back into the studio and really grind away at this next record.
Maybe a good timing, actually, to just go right in and we're going to definitely be, you know, really hunkering down now to get that going.
Frank says Anthrax isn't putting anything out until it's done.
You don't put the record out until it's ready.
Yeah.
That's the way I look at it. That's the way we've always looked at it. You can't put out, it has to be quality.
And Bumblefoot tells us where they're at as far as the new Sons of Apollo record's concerned.
And drums are done. Keyboard's just about done. I gotta go home and lay my guitar solos. Jeff is working on his vocals now.
That's just the tip of the rock and roll iceberg today. Talking Rock with Frank Bello, David Ellefson, and Bumblefoot.
This is Talking Rock. Talking Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
This is really a great episode of Talking Rock with Meltdown. Of course, I think all of them are great, but this one's really great. I mean, there's no two-second delay when you're talking to somebody on the phone because they're in Buenos Aires, and there's a third person, a third party kind of, you know, catching you guys. There's no time constraints, although David Ellefson did say when they came in, hey, we got to get out of here by 10 o'clock to catch an airplane. But outside of that, it was like free form, just ready to roll, talk about the new project, Altitudes and Attitude. I guess a new band. It's not actually a project. It is a band, as David was mentioning. And then, of course, Bumblefoot tagged along as well. I've known Bumblefoot now for a couple years. Super good guy. Sons of Apollo is just such a great band. He gives us an update on what those guys have going on, as well as updates on Megadeth and Anthrax and the whole thing. Really a great conversation. I caught these guys last night at the world famous Machine Shop up there in Flint, Michigan. If you ever get a chance to see a band there, great rock shop, great rock club to go see, you know, bands. It's kind of funny because it's kind of in the middle of nowhere. It's not Detroit. So some of the bands that would play a bigger venue down here play up there. And it's not, you know, Saginaw. It's kind of stuck somewhere in the middle. So you'd be surprised some of the bands that come through there and just pack the Machine Shop. So really cool place. Kevin and his staff do a great job up there. But these guys went on stage last night, Sunday night in Flint, Michigan. Not exactly a packed crowd, but they played their hearts out last night. And then they meet with the fans. They're so good with the fans. All these guys come out afterwards and sign autographs and take pictures and the whole thing. So there's just not enough adjectives to describe how good these guys are to their fans and just people in general. Just such nice guys. So I wish nothing but the best for them. They said they wanted to come in and do a little, do the podcast here and talk about what's going on with their band, you know, like I said, with their other bands as well. And we kind of hooked this up. And I'll tell you what, it's a fun conversation. I hope you guys dig this. By the way, if you like this podcast, 5-star rating, write a review. And of course, as always, share with your friends. 248-586-2988, by the way, if you want to leave some feedback on the voicemail. In the meantime, without further ado, it's the guys from Altitudes and Attitude, David and Frank, and Bumblefoot joins us as well. Hey, first of all, thanks so much for stopping by so early in the morning. The words of Frank Bello echoed in my head last night. Don't oversleep.
Dude, I thought I was going to. Well, I almost did today. I kept pushing that thing on my phone, you know, the snooze thing. And it just, you know, another 15 minutes. And that's why I look so great right now.
The other words are, if I'm going to feel hungover, I wish I would have drank.
Right. Dude, that's the problem. I feel like if I'm going to feel like this, I want to drink a lot. You know, that's the problem. I have this hangover and I didn't drink.
I'll teach you for being sober.
So yeah. I wanted to take you guys to get back to the hotel. It didn't take 2 hours like David was saying, was it?
By the time we found that stupid lobby.
Yeah, getting to the hotel was like an hour. Getting to the lobby was another 45 minutes.
That construction. Yeah, down the construction. But this sign, I swear, it's a 2-inch sign that said lobby.
Yeah.
And you couldn't find it.
Nothing's worse than pulling into a hotel that you see construction because you're just like, oh my gosh, first thing in the morning. Yeah. All hotels have this one drill. Like, they all share it around the world. And it, like, when the drill, it rattles the bones of the entire hotel.
So, were they up there this morning or what?
They weren't, actually.
I didn't hear them.
Yeah.
I didn't hear them.
The one day we needed them to be working to wake us up, they weren't. So, there is no justice in this this cruel world.
Well, you guys also brought Bumblefoot with you.
Yes,
Bumblefoot.
We did.
There he is. Yeah. All right, we'll talk about his adventure coming up here in just a few minutes. But first of all, Altitudes and Attitude, great album, great show last night.
Thanks,
you know,
man.
I was talking to somebody about this. I saw Muse on Thursday. Have you guys seen Muse before?
I have.
Of course, I love it. Yeah.
Okay, now that show is like amazing, right?
Yeah, incredible.
But it's almost so incredible, it almost seems kind of fake.
I get it.
You know what I mean?
They're that good.
Yeah, exactly. And last night when you guys like started up with like Shock Me and stuff, and then it kind of fell apart, like that's kind of like real. And even though it fell apart, it was still kind of cool, you know?
Well, you know what's weird? I thought we jammed it with this drummer.
I thought we did too.
I swear, didn't we? Is he lying?
I swear, I know. We started playing the song, and he's looking at me going, I don't know it. I'm like, come on.
Well, we did it on Shiprock.
Yeah. So we didn't do it with Christian
but
at all.
But not with him.
Because I think Dave said he wanted to do it. I said, fine, I'll do it. So I start the song. He didn't know the Phil that started first.
Yeah.
Then I knew we were in trouble.
Well, plus we're all Kiss fans, so everybody should know Shock Me. I mean, it's almost we should give him a citation.
Yeah, he's getting,
you know, for, like, for not knowing his rock.
So we started the song, and you saw what happened. Yeah. You know, and he's hitting that crazy beat. I don't know what he was doing.
I think he was playing I Was Made for Loving You. He was on a whole different page.
You should be. He was just trying to catch up to it. And I was like, all right, let's just stop this before it gets really ugly.
But actually, that's kind of, you know, we have those fun moments in the set. You know, like where Frank turns it over to Bumble and, all right, play us some songs, you know. And there's kind of it's kind of that moment in the set where we do have fun and we goof off, and it's meant to, you know, but it's not a planned train wreck. It's sort of it's just a moment like, hey, let's, I don't know, rip through some Jackson 5 for
I kind of just want to see what happens with it. I put a juke, you put, like he says, put a quarter in him and just see what happens.
Yeah.
And Bumble usually comes up with insane stuff, which I always find entertaining.
You got to watch where you put that quarter, but... Yeah, but that's the thing. So in this kind of band, though, it kind of gives you a little bit of freedom to kind of do stuff like that.
Totally.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, it's
you know,
it's
we don't play to a click track. We don't do any of that, and that's fine. I mean, you know, in big productions, you kind of need sometimes this machinery and this technology, because there's a lot of moving parts. There's big, you know, lighting cues, and the bigger the room, the bigger the expectation, the bigger the show. So, you know, you have to go there with some of that stuff. But yeah, this is lean and mean. And plug and play. And, you know, we're out here, you know, in a van, driving around, doing this. And
look at us.
Yeah. You know, and somebody's looking and said, what are we thinking? Shouldn't we be home relaxing, enjoying the good life right now? But, you know, it's the love of the game, man. You know, it's the love of the music. It's the love of the game. There's kind of a, you know, there's a game that goes along with this whole thing. And let's face it, you know, it's fun to be in the game.
Yeah, it's totally fun. We're having a good time. I mean, look, the van thing, look, I kind of like the fact that we're building this thing up. And you've seen people's reactions after the live show. Thankfully, they love the record. So when they see it live, that matches that. I love hearing, like, even talking to a lot of people last night, they love the show.
You know, you said something, Frank, last night that we're, you know, how much of America we have not seen because we are insulated in the bubble of a tour bus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, someone else is driving, you go to your bunk, you're sitting watching movies, whatever. And, you know, when you're out here really doing it. And these cities that we've gone to, we started basically in Milwaukee. We did an acoustic show that morning, drove over to Madison, did a show that night, plus a VIP dinner. And then after that show, drove to Chicago. I mean, it's insane.
Yeah, this is like the six nights in a row, right?
Yeah. And no bus driver and tour manager and, you know, all the staff, just us dudes, you know, pack it up, let's go. And because all bands start at the bottom, you know, it doesn't matter how big our other bands are. This is a new band. It's not a project. It's not a little one-off. It's a real band. And you know, in order to build a band and build a new name, you know, we didn't call it Bellow and Ellison.
Right? Just going to ask you about that. Why not?
We should have. I know. Well, it's funny. I wanted to. We were kicking around on the label and everybody else. Nah, Altitudes and Attitudes kind of started. People have expected that. So, you know, we went with it. And I thought Bellow Allison, just because it was kids growing up, there was like Whitford St. Holmes, which was Brad Whitford, Derek St. Holmes.
Coverdale Page.
Coverdale Page. You know, there's kind of these, you know, there's sort of a name. Yeah, I thought Bellowson.
He actually said Bellowson. But that just flips off the tongue like that.
Bellowson, you know, yeah.
Yeah, that's one of the things I was going to ask you about, because it's like, you know, people may not know that you guys are in the band.
I know. I mean, they don't.
You've done press and stuff, you know.
Yeah,
and
we're trying to get it out there right now.
However, we have discovered that Altitudes and Attitude, AAA, like when you open up the phone book and look for a plumber, you go for AAA Plumbing or AAA.
Right.
So if you need entertainment, AAA, you know.
So we got that going for us.
Altitudes,
which is nice.
Who are these guys? Let's give them a call.
Yeah, because in 2019, people are always looking in the phone book.
Exactly. Yellow Pages, right to the Yellow Pages, especially when they need entertainment. entertainment, you know.
Hey, so somebody said this to me last night, and I kind of thought the same thing, too. Do you guys get that Foo Fighters comparison?
Yeah.
Because I've heard that.
Yeah.
You know, when I first started listening to the record, I thought of the John Bush era Anthrax.
Yeah.
And then Foo Fighters, yeah.
You know, it's funny because you get the Foo Fighters, you get the Police, you get a lot of different, which I love because this is, some people said Boston. Wow. The 70s stuff, I kind of love that, too. So I think that's where we grew up, you know, with all that 70s great classic rock. So, look, if any of these successful bands is being compared to, I'm very happy about it. So, I mean, it's in that right, it's on the right road, so.
Yeah, when somebody said Foo Fighters last night, I didn't really get it. Then I saw you guys play, and I'm like, okay, I can get this. I can see that for sure.
It's better, instead of the drummer coming over and playing guitar, it's the bass player guy. Yeah.
Well, you know, that's the other thing. We literally talked about it two nights ago backstage is that, and Frank, you brought it up, was that, you know, people identify us as two bass players, which is true in our other groups. But, you know, in this band, there's, you know, somehow I've been deemed the bass player.
You're a bass player.
Yeah, because it's funny. We both write on guitar. We both do it. And I've said that for years, you know, when people ask me, hey, how do you compose? I said, ironically, I'm usually at home playing my guitar. That's how I come up with things. Even sometimes on an acoustic guitar, once in a while on a piano, you know, and then move it over, bring it into the band, and it turns into, you know, that song. And that's how both Frank and I write with this one, except Leviathan is a bass riff.
Well, I was going to say, Leviathan's almost like your guys kind of like Orion. And last night, you guys stretch it out live.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, we have a lot of fun with that. And it can kind of keep going. And we, you know, it sort of gets its structure in place after, I guess, after you've been on the road for a week playing it every day. But, you know, it's one of those songs we try not to have it be too structured. Mm-hmm. You know, like there's probably me and Frank just sit back and watch Bumble play and let him run out of licks, and he never does.
So. He does. So. All of a sudden, there's lights everywhere, yeah. There's UFO and this guitar going on. Yeah. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, as long as there's a curfew, we should probably shut her down and get out of this song now and get on to the next one.
One more lick.
So you guys just got off the road with Slash, right? Played over in Europe, right?
Yeah.
And that
awesome.
Was, I mean,
so cool.
He's generous enough. That's how great of a guy he is. Those shows were sold out anyway. He doesn't need A&A to come on the tour with him, but he did graciously and sold out. It's just great for a band, an upstart band like this, just to go and throw us up there. And it went over. That's the great thing about it. Those shows, we won the audience over. They didn't know the first song, but on the second song, they were on it with their hands up. And that's what really counts for me. Believe me, I would love to do more of that tour because it was the right audience.
And he was kind enough to let his bass player, Todd Kearns, who's been a friend of ours,
awesome,
you know,
Todd.
Before he was even playing with Slash, you know, to come up and jam some Kiss songs with us.
Yeah.
You know, so, and it's great because his audience knows Todd as a member of Slash and Miles' band. Yeah. So when he came out, it was cool. The place, oh, yeah, Todd's out here. And then we rip into a Kiss tune, you know, and it was really a great collaborative thing amongst friends on the Slash tours.
Now, as much as like A&A is kind of, you guys are building up from the ground and stuff, how much of is there an itching for you guys to like get back to the mothership?
Oh, for sure. I mean, look, there, you know, I think that's one of the things these things have done, and I've done, and Frank, you've done it too, and you've been in Helmet and done other things, and you know, there's these you know, like I had F5, I had a bunch of other little groups in this season that I wasn't in Megadeth. And you're right, there's this time. Mike Portnoy, who's our friend, he said it best. He goes, you know, I needed my big gig fix when he got the Twisted Sister gig.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And you know, so I think we all go through it. We go through these periods where we build up these amazing groups. I mean, we're so blessed, you know, to have these opportunities because those days just, they barely exist anymore. You know, Frank and I got in under the wire, man, years ago, you know, these 35-year overnight sensations that we built.
I saw somebody with an Anthrax shirt yesterday, said 1981. That's approaching 40 years.
The way I look at it, look, I'm literally flying back to Anthrax today.
Yeah.
I'm flying to write their Anthrax record in L.A. today. So.
Right.
I love that balance. I love that this is an outlet that we need, quite honestly.
Yeah,
I think we both need this from our day jobs. The day jobs, we all know it's the most important. That it's never going to change. Mm-hmm. This is something on the side when we have time. It's a passion thing that we have, and we have a lot of fun. I look at my friend Corey from Stone Sour. Slipknot.
Slipknot, yeah.
And he has this great band, Stone Sour. You know, why not? And it's both different music and all that good stuff, but is a lot of time. When this band's off, you do that. I think it can be done.
It's done certainly from a creative point of view, you know. Like even Frank and I will be out doing Anthrax, Megadeth, these big, you know, 3-year monolith tours, supporting records. And you know, there we'll reach this point where suddenly we get a message from each other. Hey, dude, what's your April looking like? You want to go to L.A.? And you can tell that's that moment that we've reached. Like, dude, I've been on the road for 6 months and I'm getting kind of burnt. And I need a little creative outlet on the side. Mm-hmm. And that's just a natural human thing. In fact, I look at guys in bands, you know, especially like my heroes that I grew up with, when they've only been in one band their whole career, I actually feel kind of bad for them.
Is it like being married to like the same woman for 50 years?
Well, look, you know, that's, you know,
it's up and down with it.
Kind of a man marriage, right?
Right. It is
for sure. And I think, you know, what's different about this is that this is intently a creative moment with these bands. Yet you know, there's a machinery and an infrastructure you build up. It becomes a business. It becomes, you know,
this is like going to hang out with the guys. Mm-hmm. You know, it'd be like that thing. I want to go out with the guys for a night. Yeah. You know, that's kind of hanging out with your buds.
Gotcha.
And I need a time off. It's not with another girl or anything. I'm not going to marry this girl. I just want to have a good time with my buddies, hang out when I'm coming back tonight. You know,
shoot some pool, have some fun,
and, you know, and just have a laugh. You know, and that's what we're doing here.
Well, I'll tell you what, we'll talk about your other bands here in a second, but Bumblefoot's over here Facebooking or doing whatever he's doing. What's up, Bumble?
What's up?
So, first of all, how do you get hooked up with these guys? Because I didn't even know that you were even with these guys until you called me the other day and said, hey, I'll be in Flint.
Yeah. I should get over to the microphone and put away my shit.
It's working.
It's like I'm still on the computer. Like, yeah. So, right. Anyway, hang on. Let me just answer this web email.
Sorry about that. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt your email.
Oh, it's okay. I'll get right back to it.
He can put his email on the air.
That's all. Let's see. Here's one from a guy named Matthew. It says, Bumblefoot Sauces update. All right.
Oh, yeah, the hot sauce thing. So tell me about getting with these guys. I know you did the bass story thing with David.
Yeah, we did that. I guess it all started, well, everybody knows each other, and everyone's got one degree of separation away, and everyone has played and jammed with each other at some point.
And it's all Kiss.
And it's true. Kiss is the degree of separation.
It really
it's like,
is.
You like it? I like it. Push jam. Yeah.
That's what happens.
That's it. So you guys were doing this, and you were doing New York shows for the album release, and they hit me up. That's simple. And that's how everything is. It's just someone you know hits you up.
And it was just announced the other day, and somebody, and then Frank, you brought it up on stage last night, and the owner, Kevin, up at the machine shop goes, dude, you're going to be in Asia? I can't believe that. And that's what that was my thought when I saw it the other day, because now you're going to be touring with Yes and stuff this summer. That's great, man.
Yeah. So I've slowly, I guess, gotten into the prog world a bit, which is weird, because when I started off, all my stuff was very proggy.
Yeah.
And it ventured away from that, and then playing with Guns, it became very, you know, just straight up and kind of stayed there with Art of Anarchy and other things. And then Sons of Apollo brought it back in, mm-hmm. where I'm playing with Portnoy and Sherinian and Jeff Downs, the keyboardist of Yes and founding member of Asia. We played together a few years ago. There was this little fun band we put together. He was on keys, I was on guitar, Rudy Sarzo on bass, Carmine.
Apathy.
Is it apathy or a piece? I'm still getting it mixed up. And every time I think
names.
I got it down,
I know it.
But then when I go to say it, I doubt myself and I end up saying the wrong one. And I'm afraid to say the last name. And I just say Carmine and I expect everyone to know who Carmine is.
Carmine Apice, Vinny Apathy.
If you get in the middle of those two, they'll have you surrounded, both of them. They've done this to me. It's Apice. No, it's Apice. And I'm like, shut up. I love those guys. They're the best.
I say Apice.
Apice.
Make one that's neither.
They're awesome.
So Carmine Apice. He was on drums. Phil Narrow of Talis, the singer of Talis, was singing. And then we had Gene Cornish from The Rascals playing guitar too. Wow. And we're total opposite guitar players. I don't think he ever even heard like a Guns N' Roses song. And I love all the old Rascals stuff. How Can I Be Sure and Groovin' and all of that. So we just jammed to everything and had a blast. And the two of us hit it off like two little kids. It was great. So we did that. And from there, that's how I knew Jeff, the keyboard player. So a year later, they asked me, it's like, you know, we're doing this tour with Journey. Do you want to hop on? And I was busy just with all these other bands and everything. And then we talked about it again last year. I was like, you know, let's do it. This could be fun. So I was just going to be the guitar player. And there were different options of possible singers. And then they were like, why don't you sing? You sing. You do it. It's like, all right. So here I am. I'm the front man of Asia.
That's kind of Jeff crazy Gunn. To think.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially in 2019.
But that's what you got to love about being a musician, is that at any moment you could look back exactly 1 year and say, did I think 1 year ago that I would be doing what I'm doing right now? And most of the time it's no. There's something going on now that you never would have planned or expected, that just falls into, you know, just fate has a good sense of humor when it comes to music. And it just comes up with all these wild things that you never would have expected. And so, yeah, so you have Jeff Downs on keyboards, a founding member. You have from ELP, Carl Palmer, who is also the founding member, the drummer of Asia that's there. When Chris Squire passed, Billy Sherwood took over in Yes, and he is also playing in Asia on bass. And Steve Howe in Yes is also a founding member of Asia, and he's going to join for half of the show.
That is so cool.
So
man,
you got the three, you know, living members of the group, and I'm going to do my best to honor Mr. Wetton and do the vocals right and play guitar and do what I can to support Steve when he's up there with us, and just give the audience, you know, Asia the way they love Asia. When they close their eyes and listen, I want it to have that spirit, and that's what I'm going for. I've been changing the way I sing. I've been telling these guys on the road, like, Ethel Merman, right? I was saying how usually when I sing, my natural singing voice is kind of, what did I say? It's like Ethel Merman, you know, Hollywood. and now it's like a totally different beast where, you know, John Wetton had a very powerful, unique voice where he just hit the note. There was no heavy vibrato. He just hit it and nailed it straight on. And the way he would resonate in a different place, and I had to start changing the way I sing and getting that feel and that sound, and I'm getting it, and it's good. Sort of stepping into the character of the band and getting to know it and really just getting one with it, you know?
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Yeah, you mentioned Chris Squire, and of course you guys are bass players, and it's like, I can't tell you the amount of times I texted Johnny Chow in the last year. So, dude, this Chris Squire guy, because I'm like kind of just discovering it again, you know what I'm saying?
It's my Chris Squire experience, of course, growing up. First, Geddy Lee was, because that's my generation, our generation, you know, and then it's funny, I had some Mennonite friends in the little town I grew up with, and they took acid and they introduced me to Yes. And so figured it's always the Mennonites leading me down the road of temptation, right? No, but I remember listening to Yes, and you know, then fast forward, I was like, okay, this is where Geddy got his inspiration, right? And kind of like, you know, you hear Kiss and Cheap Trick, and then you hear the Beatles. And that's kind of how it was. I mean, I you know, grew up on a farm in Minnesota. I mean, I was like out in the middle of nowhere, you know. All I had was country music around me growing up, you know. So I discovered things in reverse, you know, and especially when I got to L.A. and I'd listen to KLOS and KMET. I started hearing, you know, I'd hear Zebra, and I went, wait a minute, that sounds a lot like the Beatles, you know. So I kind of discovered sort of things in reverse, you know.
Well, Gene's he'll admit that he stole
from the Beatles, Well, so it's funny with Chris Squire, so I discovered that. I'm going, okay, I hear where he gets his tone. And so one day I go to see No Doubt when Gwen Stefani had come back, and they did this big reunion. This is maybe 10 years ago, probably about 10 years ago, actually, and in Phoenix. So I go out, and the promoter, Danny, says, here, I'll let you sit in my suite, you know, out front. And so my wife and I, we go, we sit there, and he says, hey, Chris Squire's coming down. And I said, really? Next thing I turn around, Chris Squire's like standing right next to me, and we're talking about the drummer. He's going, man, that drummer, no doubt, is amazing. And we're sitting there just kind of, you know, BSing back and forth, that's just so, like so having cool, this hang, man. Like wow. Just like just two dudes, you know? And I had a card with me. I said, hey, let's, you know, you want to hook up and go have lunch? And so we did. We went and we had lunch about, I don't know, a month later. Turns out he and his wife, Scotty, they live in, I live in Scottsdale, Arizona, and they live in Chandler, which is close by, it's a suburb of Phoenix. So here it turns out he lives in Phoenix.
That's great.
And so we went to True Foods, or I think it is, and we had a meal. And it's funny, over that conversation, he was telling me how he invented the Rickenbacker, what they call the Ricco sound, which is a stereo output of the guitar, where the front pickup, and it's kind of a weird stereo, it's not true stereo, but the front pickup goes to one amp and the back pickup goes to another amp. And he was saying the front pickup goes to an Ampeg SVT and the back pickup, which is that trebly, very definitive Chris Squire tone. Yeah, he said, you know, that runs to an old Marshall I've used from the very beginning. I still have it. Like, that's the tone. And that's the Chris Squire sound. And so I remember getting a Rickenbacker when I was like 13, 14 years old and picking it up and going, why does this thing have two jacks on it? And they call it the Ricco sound. What is that? And now, years later, as a bass player myself, a professional, but also a fan of the instrument, you know, I was talking with the guy who
invented
that. You know, it'd be like sitting with Jim Marshall or Leo Fender and discovering why they invented something. So it was such a great honor.
Well, it's so funny because I was talking with Kevin last night from the bar, and I said, you know, I'm not really starstruck a lot. I have been in my life a few times, but when I was driving you guys around Niagara Falls, I'm like, Dave Ellison from Megadeth is in the back of my car, and I was on stage at Clash of the Titans. It's like a weird how this world like kind of works. You know what I'm saying? It's just kind of a strange thing.
You know, we're all fans, and that's why, like, last night we play an honor to Ace Frehley because he played the guitar solo on the song Late for Altitudes and Attitude, yeah. And then we just naturally unite over Detroit Rock City, which was ironic that was the last show of the tour last night, you know, in Michigan.
Right.
And of course, knowing today, we're coming to Detroit, and you know, we realized that, you know, our era of bands all really did their woodshedding and broke as successful groups in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. And I'm a Midwest kid. I grew up in Minnesota, so I get it. I grew up on a farm. But, you know, you hear the story of, you know, how Rush, you know, broke, and surely Grand Funk and Kiss and Styx and Ted Nugent, yeah. And REO Speedwagon, all these great groups that we grew up on in the 70s. This was the meat and potatoes. It was here in the Midwest, you know, and so it's kind of funny that here we are, yeah, in a van driving around the Midwest, basically breaking our band here.
Dude, one day I went on the air, and I was already on the radio here for like 12 or 13 years or so, and I was playing Detroit Rock City at 7 o'clock at night in Detroit Rock City, a song I played hundreds of times before, and it was kind of like that epiphany, that one night I'll never forget. I'm like, holy crap, I'm playing Detroit Rock City in Detroit,
it's
Rock
so cool.
City.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so cool.
And I just grew up in a little small town like you did outside of, yeah, Buffalo, you know?
Well, and the story of, I think it was Detroit Rock City, was the A side. That was the intended single. And on the B side, they put Beth.
Okay, yeah.
You know, and then, at least as the story goes, and right, one day a guy just like you at a radio station, oh, what is this B side? And then Beth starts, and that became the hit that changed their entire lives, you know? And wasn't that what the Rush song was? It was like Working Man or something. It had this big long guitar solo, like the DJ needed a pee break.
Yeah, 7
right?
minutes long.
Yeah, right. So all of a sudden, it's like that became the hit, playing out of, I think even out of Toronto or something, but it bled like over that into, yeah, Michigan or in Ohio or something.
Divine intervention, right?
Yeah.
There,
so it's just, sure, funny how, yeah, you know, radio. It's, you know, we as artists and certainly as record labels, you know, we think, you know, we kind of, well, we think this is something that radio will like, but you just don't know. Like, we've got this song Slip, which is kind of seems to be this next track that everybody really seems to like at radio, and we play it live, and we certainly play it acoustic. And
yeah, and everywhere we go, for some reason, people pick that song out, and even when we do acoustic stuff for like radio stations, and people say, what is that song? And they're picking that, mm-hmm, song out, which is great to hear, because the more the merrier. Right?
Well, it's like,
it's our best.
Yeah. It's like trying to go viral. If you just make something that you think will go viral, it won't.
Yeah,
it's just,
yeah.
You just have to have luck of the draw. Yeah. So let's go around around the room here and tell me what's going on with Anthrax. Give me your update there, Frank.
Anthrax, I go there today. I'm going to L.A. We're writing a new record. You know, we've been out. This record's over 3 years old now. And
right.
We've been touring, I swear to God, every day of it. But it feels like, because I haven't seen my family in quite a while. It's been like that. But it's been a great run. We've been on this whole thing with Slayer, the reunion tour.
Yeah.
Not yet.
That's coming.
No, we've been on this farewell tour, and it's been amazing. The numbers are insane coming out on this tour. We just finished Japan, Australia. Right now, and we're going to Europe, by the way. We're going to Europe. I just remember this. We're going to Europe in June with the whole festival thing, with some Slayer shows and having some fun.
With Anthrax.
Yeah.
So have you guys started writing or recording or anything?
Yeah, we have. There's some anger there, which I'm happy to hear.
Yeah.
There's some good anger, and that leads to a good heavy record. I'm very excited.
What makes you angry now?
Life. Dave will tell you there's a lot of things in my mind that aren't right. So
and you put it out on your record here.
Yeah, and there's a lot there. So and that funnels its way into Anthrax too. So it should be good. I'm excited about the new Anthrax later on.
So what do you got? I just talked to Dave a couple weeks ago,
right?
And he says there's about 8 songs done or something. And he kind of said something. He goes like, "Yeah, I'm waiting for some of the other guys or whatever to kind of contribute a little bit or kind of put their stuff in." Or I mean, how does that work?
So we shut down pretty much the end of 2017 was when we wrapped up in South America, and then the intention was 2018 would be writing a new album. Probably our biggest challenge is we don't live in the same cities. Kiko and Dirk are in L.A. I'm in Scottsdale. Dave's over in Nashville. Nashville's kind of the creative hub of our operation, where we rehearse and we do everything. And then, we worked, I think, I don't know, we did only about 8 weeks of shows last year that just kind of came up, Europe and Mexico and stuff. It's funny, we have like a Dropbox folder that we all access, and we kind of, but it's organized well, where we keep track of what people are putting in there and contributing. And now is really, and it's kind of, that's why Frank and I have been able to do Altitudes and Attitude right now, is because it's this window we have early in the year to do this. We were obviously planning to do the Ozzy Megadeth tour, and now that's been pushed back till next year, in a way probably opens up a perfect window for us to really get in now.
Get in there, cram. I was going to ask you about that.
So all things happen for a reason, So I think on the Megadeth schedule, it's probably maybe a good timing actually to just go right in and we're going to definitely be really hunkering down now to get that going, because we have some of our own shows in August that have been on the books. There's actually a few more coming in now,
and the cruise and everything.
Doing that, there's Rock in Rio, and that's early October, and then there's the cruise, and as much as we were hoping to have a record out this year, looking at kind of how the dystopia timeline was, where we were working on it early in 2015. We started doing some shows later that year with, we put out a heavy track, Fatal Illusion, which was, the heavy, hard track. And then the record dropped in early 2016. So in this case, sometime probably early 2020 is my thought, that's probably when the record will be ready to come out. So
now I asked Dave, and I'll ask you the same question. Because of the dystopia winning a Grammy and stuff, do you feel any added pressure, or is it just business as usual?
Winning the Grammy was a relief, to be honest with you. I don't think that is pressure at all. I think it's kind of like, oh, finally, because it's kind of, our first nod probably with you too, Frank, was 1991 when we were in Clash of the Titans. I remember we had gotten for Hangar 18 was our first Grammy nomination, and man, and we're blessed to have had so many, but it's funny. I went to the Grammy office, the Recording Academy office in Santa Monica last summer, and even they were like, about time. Thank God you guys finally won. Even they were relieved, because they know they haven't done the best job in getting the metal category right. And in fact, to the degree that they've actually called on a lot of us, they invite us as, the Mastodon guys, they invite us to like, hey, please sit on the panel that decides what songs are to be nominated and make sure they're in the right category, because it's a genre that they haven't, and they admittedly they haven't understood it over the years.
Now
they
got a lot of their wheelhouse. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Now they've got some younger people in there and a really kind of a cool little crew of people at the Recording Academy that get this now, I think. But I think, look, we've never wrote music to win Grammys,
right?
So to win one is awesome, and it's kind of like, okay, that's, that mountain has been scaled, and now we've agreed that the Dystopia album across the board is like, that's really now the benchmark. I think, you know, the 90s were so cruel to thrash metal, you know, largely because the Seattle movement came in early on, and everything, the record companies, video music channels, you know, radio, of course, always, you know, gives the people what's trending in, you know, Seattle, and then it was new metal music. And
you say that too, and I can remember, because I was on the radio in the 90s, and then when Symphony came out, man, that got a lot of push.
No,
I'm not
huge.
Saying that, I'm not saying you're,
that was early
90s,
but again, by the mid 90s, when the Seattle thing had really, really
ramped
taken
up,
and look, and that's just how it goes. Nothing lasts forever, you know. And we had our big late 80s, early 90s ramp up, and you know, the big four, if you will, you know, Metallica, Megadeth, Slayer, Anthrax. Our genre got to enjoy this huge success, and then, you know, that's a new tide comes in, and it was Seattle. Then it was, you know, new metal. It was Disturbed and Godsmack and Korn and all that stuff. So it was kind of a weird moment for the thrash bands, and, you know, to survive even through the 2000s. And I think with Megadeth, there's a long time of just trying to get the course of the ship back on track. And I think by the, you know, Dave did a couple records when I wasn't in the band, Endgame album in particular, that I think was really good, really started to get things recorrected, and, you know, and it took until, I think, Dystopia, we really hit the mark. I mean, that's the modern day version of what probably Countdown to Extinction was in the early 90s. So we feel like the course is corrected, the band's really on track, you know, stylistically with what our fans like to hear. And, you know, now, you know, these bands, it's, I kept asking Dave and even management, going, man, aren't we kind of to that point where we don't just have to make a record tour, make a record tour, make a record tour? Because that's always the cycle. And I think, you know, Slayer, Megadeth, Anthrax, Metallica, you know, again, I'll just reference the big four. I think we're there now. You know, we're where Asia is. You know, we don't have to put a new album out. we can go tour, you know.
We really don't. I mean, think about my Anthrax touring cycle right now. The last over 3 years, that record is gone, is out. I mean, you don't put the record out until it's ready.
Yeah.
That's the way I look
Absolutely.
At it. That's the way we've always looked at it. You can't put out, it has to be quality.
What's your benchmark record? He said Dystopia.
You know, the last two records, I have to say, there's a resurgence since the big four. And again, I have to credit Metallica for this.
Yeah.
They really, I mean, and again, along with a whole new generation of fans they brought in for all of us, I think. That, I guess people may have heard of Anthrax on that big four thing, and maybe Metallica fans were like, all right. And they got the whole thing. And since then, it's been, nonstop, which is great. And that's inspiring, and that makes you want to go, and that makes you even more hungry. You taste it. And I think we taste the blood.
So. Well, what's funny is our past is still our strongest leg forward, you know what I mean? And fortunately, our bands can still write compelling, really good new music, you know. But it's, look, when we started writing Altitudes and Attitude, I went down and picked Frank up because they're coming through Phoenix on the Among the Living, 30th anniversary tour.
Anniversary,
so it just goes to show, and, you know, next year's going to be 30 years of Rust in Peace for us. So it's like these legacy albums of ours, we're so lucky that we had, it isn't just the success we had from them years ago, but these albums that for whatever reason became the voice of that generation. And I don't know about you, Frank, but I see in the front row, you know, there's teenagers, you know,
go
out there, Megadeth and Anthrax, it's probably at Hot Topic or online or whatever, you know, and they're young, but they're there to see the mighty, you know, thrasher genre, you know, they're looking at us in awe. And then behind that is, you know, probably the next generation. And then in the lower low seats are the, 30 and 40 year olds who, you know, have been longtime fans, and then the 50 year olds are up in the top because they're like, yeah, we're not
going to. I don't want to be in the pit.
We're not going to get our ass kicked anymore in the pit. But
and that's what makes you want to do new music, quite honestly. And just because it'll be their time, the newer fans, too.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, all right, that was my, oh, I like this one, the new stuff, too. And that's what makes it all worthwhile. And it's fun to look forward now. You know?
Now obviously, the Big Four was really big at the time. You know, what year was that when you guys played out? Like
2010 is when it started.
So now we're looking back 9 years, and it almost seem like it kind of gets bigger every year. Like people probably ask you about the Big Four all the time.
Yes, they do, and it's great to hear that. It's really up to Metallica. You know, when is the Big Four going to come around? It's really, talk to James Hetfield. Really, we're all ready.
I don't know. Scott Ian said one guy was the sticking point. It was David Ellefson. He said,
always difficult to deal with. Always a problem.
Yeah. That was in his spoken word thing.
I heard about that. I heard that.
My thing is, look, we're ready and willing to do that. That's fun. I think it's great for the fans. I honestly, because I'm a fan, I want to see that.
I would love to see it one more time, but obviously, you know, Slayer. Doing their thing, and they're going to call it a day.
Yeah, I bet you if we knocked on that door, they would listen.
That would be awesome.
You know, I'm just saying, I think if you knocked on that door, because that's how special the Big Four. I mean, from the environment that we had on that tour, I mean, I know the fans saw that, but you got to see what we went through. It was such a great experience for us, the bands within. It was a really, it was like high school reunion kind of vibe, and it was like everybody all for one, I mean, it was great. Mm-hmm. It was a great vibe.
Yeah, that was cool. Well, I'll tell you what. Hey, Bumble.
Yeah.
Yeah, give us an update on Sons of Apollo here.
Oh, yeah.
I know you guys got to get going to the airport and stuff. So
Sons of Apollo, we're working on the second record, and drums are done. Keyboard's just about done. I got to go home and lay my guitar solos. Jeff is working on his vocals now. And as he's doing that, it gives us ideas for the music. Like, oh, we should change this now. And like each one of us that lays something down makes the rest of us inspired to take our own parts to the next level, and we're really we have the whole year to nurture these songs and build them, and the album should be out by early next year, and in June I believe we're going to put out a live show, Blu-ray DVD
from the past tour.
Yeah. We did one at this ancient Roman amphitheater in Bulgaria where we had a choir and a full orchestra. And we did a bunch of covers, too, and we're waiting to see who's going to give us permission to use their songs. I don't know if Led Zeppelin is going to say yes or not to things like that. So we're just getting that all tidied up, and then that'll be out in the summer.
Let me ask you about this, because this, without naming names, you've worked with some difficult characters in this business. Do you feel that now, because you're working with so many great people, you're kind of being paid back?
Good question.
Wow.
Great question. That's a great question right there.
You know what? The way I look at it, and I'm part of this as well.
Uh-oh, I don't know. Your microphone's flipping out. Hang on. Get that mic. Here, Bumble. Use this.
Oh, that was good timing.
Oh, there we go. All right. Yeah, go ahead.
That was good timing. It was shutting off on me before I said anything I shouldn't. No, seriously, though. The way I look at it
all...
You
can just tell me no comment, Meltdown, and I'm walking out the door.
I have a comment. Everybody, no matter what the situation is, we all do our best with who we are at that time in the situation that we're in at that time. And it's as simple as that. And a few years later, maybe people would have a different perspective and react differently. I know I would. I look at the way I responded to situations a few years ago, and it would be different now. And I would have a different perspective. And I probably would have done things myself that maybe didn't stir the crap. You know, so it's that kind of thing.
So like, you're putting a little bit of the blame on yourself?
Everybody equally contributes to a situation.
Yeah.
So if things weren't good, I am definitely part of that. I don't blame people. I'm not a victim of anything. And if things didn't work out, sometimes just the chemistry isn't there, or the situation just brought out the worst in people, or I responded the wrong way to something, whatever it is. That's really what everything is about. So you can't go back and say, oh, this guy was difficult, this one was difficult. We were just in the situations we were in, and we responded how we responded for who we were at the time. And if it didn't go well, maybe down the road it would have, and we don't know. But all I know is that looking back on it all, all of us involved, whatever it was, whether it was guns, whether it's Art of Anarchy, which really had its ups and downs as well in situations, even Sons of Apollo, whatever it is, anything, Asia, what is to come, anything, you just do your best with who you are and try and just...
Well, I told you this before, I'm super happy for you that you got, you know, hooked up with all these great guys and Jeff Scott Soto and Billy Sheehan and whatnot. And
one thing I could say for sure is that right now I couldn't be happier playing with you guys.
Thank you.
And playing with the people I'm playing with. It's been wonderful. It's been a great couple of years. And guns, too. I'm not trying to allude. Look, we had our bad moments, and maybe the wounds were raw at the time when I would talk about it a few years ago. But honestly, we had wonderful experiences. We made so many people happy out there. And we had a lot of laughs, and we had a lot of great memories. And I'm glad that I could be part of that.
Well, you know what a big fan I am of that record.
Chinese.
Oh.
Yeah, you love that album.
Love it. One of my favorites of the 2000s.
Yeah, so much went into that album.
Yeah. I know you explained it to me one day.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Oh, yeah. Didn't we just sit in your car and...
No, you explained how the record was like a porno, but we'll get that to another time.
Oh, that's what I was talking to you guys about. I made the same...
reference, yeah.
Yeah, when something is so full and balanced and is just like the exact amount of things and there's not room for anything else in there.
Right, exactly.
And you just have it just right.
You said it another way to us, but we won't go there.
He told me another way, too.
Well, that's what I was... Yeah, and that we were just saying about the schedule on this past week, how the amount of shows and press and promo and different events and everything were just, you know, really just put... into the week to the limit where if there was just one more thing, it would have tipped over.
Right. Well, I'm glad you guys came in. Thank you so much for the time this morning. It's been really cool to see you guys again. And Frank, hope your voice holds up.
Oh,
I know
yesterday
you had
a fight today.
Yeah, you're doing fine, all right?
You're good, man. Yeah, thanks for having us, Meltdown. And thanks for the opportunity, man, getting this thing out there.
Oh, no problem. My pleasure. And David, always great seeing you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Yep, yep.
So we'll see you guys next time. Safe travels. And next time, bro. Maybe with the big band. Who knows?
Yeah, we'll see.
That was killer, man. Good stuff right there. David Ellison, Frank Bello, and Bumblefoot. Hope you guys enjoyed that as much as I did talking to these guys. Like I said before in the intro, nicer guys are hard to find. I mean, just pleasant to be around, super gracious with the fans. I mean, they took pictures here with people at work walking out, just running into them in the hallway and stuff, and didn't say no to anybody. That's just how they are. Really nice guys. I can wish only the best for them. So hope you guys liked that. If you did, give it a 5-star rating, write a review, share it with your friends, and like I said, feel free to leave me a voicemail at 248-586-2988. Normally, we do rock news with Al Beck. Al's off doing something else today, so we're going to cut it off right here. But as always, thank you guys so much for listening. I've got some interviews in the works right now that we're kind of working on for future episodes. So check back, subscribe, just like I met a guy last night, the Machine Shop, said he subscribed to the show, and we do appreciate that as well. We try to give you the best as far as rock interviews and whatnot right here at Talking Rock with Meltdown. Once again, thank you so much for listening.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.